hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in the fog that deep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. I read about some squirrely guy who claims he just don't believe in the fight. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in a fought and died. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, if you don't love and leave it, let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. That's the name of this program, heroicresistanceradio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. Of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, Sunday night in my hometown of Hamilton saw a very disgraceful incident. Campaign of People's Party of Canada leader Maxime Bernier had booked the auditorium at Mohawk University for a discussion with an American talk show host named Rubin. There have been efforts to cancel the meeting. Pressure being brought to bear, as often happens in these cases, by anti-FA groups and others on the meeting hall. Well, the college did not particularly distinguish itself by its courage. It mumbled some stuff about, well, it was obligated by law to, thank heavens, by new provincial law to grant meeting space to any public group, much as it seemed to pain them. However, they decided they would increase the asking for the insurance. Now, this has sabotaged some conservative student groups. The university will then say, well, let's say maybe a couple hundred dollars, and even that's a lot for security. It'll be in the case of one student group, I believe it was something like $7,000 or $8,000. Well, that's just out of the question, and this is a way to put these bureaucratic obstacles in the way of groups that they don't like. So we're not saying that we won't rent your meeting room. However, you have to cover what we assume will be the cost of security. In fact, I think one university was asking something like $27,000 for an evening meeting. Well, you know, no student group out of its own means is going to be able to do that. So essentially, it just bids them out of the run. Well, the talk show host in this case called their bluff and said, "Well, okay, I don't want to do this, but I will put up the money." Oh, shucks. Okay, foiled again. So that didn't work. So the meeting went ahead, and people assembled. People tried to get in, and there was a demonstration by apparently about up to 100 Antifa, many of them masked. Now, at that point, the police should have arrested them, and that's just elementary. You cannot wear a mask under Canadian law. You can't wear a mask in the commission of a crime. In fact, the only time that there's a license to wear a mask would be for masquerade ball. Well, this wasn't one, and on Halloween. So there was a failure of policing, but things went from bad to worse. People were hassled coming into the meeting, and one particularly elderly woman on a walker, accompanied by an elderly gentleman, tried to make their way through the Antifa lines. And she was yelled at, screamed at, called a Nazi, said that there was no room for Nazis here, and so on. She is slowly struggling with the assistance of her elderly friend to make her way into the college meeting hall. There's many people disgrace themselves that night. I would say many of the onlookers, "What's the matter with you? Why didn't you go and intervene and tell them to lay off this poor person?" There were three Antifa, one female, screaming like with near hysteria, "Nazi free zone, no Nazis," and this type of thing. I play it, except that, in fact, I will try to play it, although, as this is a outdoors, the sound isn't necessarily all that good, but you actually have to hear the hysteria, the madness, and masked, of course, harassing this old lady, blocking her way. Eventually, she did get to go in, video has gone absolutely viral, and yet the Canadian media have not reported the story nearly as much as the Australian and the American media. Our conformist kept media, with a few exceptions, does not really get what's going on. Or doesn't want to inform people of what's being done to us. I'm going to try to play this. You might be to get to hear it. It's shocking to see this old lady slowly proceeding forward, pushing her walker, and these young thugs, masked, of course, haranguing her. One of them, it turns out, is a Syrian refugee. Yeah, you got it. And he's been outed on Facebook as a person who's works in his father's restaurant in the 600 block of Queen Street West and down in West Center West Toronto. And you think this is exactly what's wrong with some of our immigration policies. Off the street, Nazi scum. Off our street, Nazi scum. There's the gay flag. The rainbow flag. Off our street, Nazi scum. That's a fucking Nazi. That's a female who's absolutely demented. We're going to make this worse than wear this. I mean it. I've circulated this widely. I know other people have too. We're going to make them wear this.
But let's go back to that idea of having a license to bully even the most harmless people. Antifa claims to be an anti-fascist group. In fact, it's fascist itself. It's responsible for political violence here and in America. And now, here is Antifa on the weekend in Canada, blockading a fundraiser that featured the leader of Canada's Conservative People's Party. And it was a meeting that drawn a crowd of voters that included one poor old lady. And joining me on What's Trending is Daisy Cousins, who runs her own video channel. She's also contributed to Spectator Australia. Daisy, lovely to see you. What should we learn from that footage, do you think?
Well, what we can learn, Andrew, is that while Antifa relentlessly claims the moral high ground by claiming to be anti-fascist, we can learn that they actually have no morals, no principles, and certainly no sense of empathy. And what I think this footage proves, Andrew, is that to Antifa, the real threat isn't Nazis or fascists or white supremacists or whatever they scream about. The real threat to them is dissent. Here you have an elderly couple that the woman was on a walker, for goodness sake, that could not have posed a physical threat if they tried, but yet they were attending an event that Antifa deems not acceptable, so therefore, according to Antifa, they are worthy of harassment and bullying and violent threats. And as for the event itself, which is screaming that it's a Nazi thing, it was a joint event to discuss free speech between Maxime Bernier, who is the head of the People's Party of Canada, and Dave Rubin, who is an extremely popular online commentator, who's a classical liberal and, in fact, an ex-leftist. Nothing to do with Nazis or anything of the sort, but because it is a deviation from the Antifa anarcho-communist narrative, everyone who attends, and of course the speakers themselves, are demonized as evil and worthy of violent threats, including, it seems, a sweet little old couple who, like I said, could not pose a violent threat if they tried.
Well, there's one other thing, just looking at it again, that occurred to me. There were at least three people filming three young people, one of them a fairly burly guy and masked threateningly. There's three people abusing a very old and frail woman, and not one of the three people filming it stepped in to help her. I thought that was rather shocking. But anyway, the Greta Thunberg phenomenon, Daisy, and a 16-year-old, a climate crusader, telling adults how to run their very complex industrial economies without coal. And this phenomenon, by the way, of child profits is not new. It's been brought to my attention nearly 30 years ago, a 12-year-old girl, Seven Colors Suzuki, who's daughter of the Canadian environmentalist David Suzuki, also lectured adults, this time at the Rio Summit, another UN fandango, lectured them about the end of the world. Have a listen.
I am fighting for my future. Losing my future is not like losing an election or a few points on the stock market. I am here to speak for all generations to come. I am here to speak on behalf of the starving children around the world whose cries go unheard.
That was a real conference in
I am here to speak for the countless animals dying across this planet because they have nowhere left to go.
Now, Daisy is 30 years on. That 12-year-old is still alive. The animals are still alive. Starvation is actually at record lows. Grain crops have never been bigger than this decade. But why don't we learn the lesson? You know, here we go again with yet another child prophet preaching doom for animals and humans.
But I know. Look, adults have always used children to galvanize other adults into supporting particular causes. Charities do it, for instance. Not necessarily a bad thing to galvanize adults to give to charities, but they talk about, say, child poverty instead of poverty because, of course, suffering children elicit a huge amount of empathy from adult responders, and understandably, because they're dependent on adults for survival, and who wouldn't want to give children a good future? So, of course, when it comes to climate change alarmists who have their own kind of whole nother agenda, using children on the front lines kind of makes sense. But look, I'm a climate centrist, Andrew, okay? I believe in listening to all the arguments on all sides of the debate to come to the best possible conclusion. And what we do about climate change is nowhere near as cut and dry as these child prophets are telling us or perhaps are being told. For example, 500 scientists signed a letter recently to the United Nations Attorney General decrying the alarmism that they were putting into their climate change rhetoric, saying there is no climate emergency, and demanding a debate in 2020 between scientists on both sides of the aisle to really nut out this climate change issue once and for all, which of course is not being reported on. And to distract from this kind of dissent within the community, the alarmists dangle children out the front, pop them on the front lines, and dare their opponents to criticize them.
That is exactly correct. I mean, on that point, I was listening to ABC presenter John Fain, who's of the Green Left, today saying how terrible it was that commentators are attacking Greta Thunberg, when in fact we're criticising a message. You know, they put a girl up and make her say all these amazing things. We say, no, she's wrong and this and this and this and this. And, how dare you, you know. And then we had New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern today also upset with Thunberg being questioned, suggesting that perhaps she might be a more worthy recipient of the Nobel Prize than herself. Have a listen.
I do think we need climate advocates. And I think, you know, it's certainly couldn't be easy having been thrust onto the world stage in that way. But I have deep admiration for her.
So there you go again, Daisy. What's your response to the left first choosing Thunberg to spread their global warming gospel, and then, having privileged her like that, put her up in the UN, savaging commentators for daring to disagree with it?
Well, Andrew, this attitude from the left really does make me giggle, because what these pearl clutchers have failed to realize is that by insisting that anyone who criticizes Greta's ideas is somehow a terrible person, because how dare you attack a child, they're actually being incredibly disrespectful of her and incredibly patronizing. Greta Thunberg, whether we agree with her or not, is an incredibly intelligent girl. She's very, very driven, and she has put herself into the arena of political ideology and politics and climate change, which is a very, very adult arena. What she's done by doing that is insist that adults take her seriously as they would another adult. And with that, you've got to expect that if the adults who agree with you are taking you seriously, well, guess what? The adults who disagree with you are also going to take you seriously and are going to treat you as an adult. And with that comes legit criticism of your ideas, which is very, very different to personal criticism. So what's so ironic here, Andrew, that it's actually Greta's critics like you and myself who are showing her much more respect than her supporters, who are coddling her and saying, oh goodness, don't talk to her in case you hurt her feelings. She's a child. It's quite funny, actually, that that kind of complex they have.
Yeah, but look, it is, in fact, I think, a great piece of dishonesty and also cowardice. As I showed you, the UN has got form for this. They give a platform to someone who's a child to say what they, the adults, want said, then pretend to be outraged when people question it because it came from a girl. Now, the girl is actually running the alarmist script that they've given her themselves. And this is, I think, in a way to try and build a little special immunity from debate, and I think it's ultimately dishonest. This is adults hiding behind a girl to present an alarmist and dishonest argument.
Oh, I fully agree. That's exactly what they're doing, and it is completely transparent and, as you say, dishonest. I saw this wonderful tweet, Andrew, since this is a segment called Trending Now, but it was just by a random person a little bit of a while ago, who said, if you can no longer defend your position, march children onto the front lines and dare your opponents to attack them. And I thought, my goodness, this sums up this situation absolutely perfectly with Greta. They have run the alarmist narrative again and again and again. People have been totally put off by it because of the sort of hysterical nature of it. They're losing people. So what do? They find this poor girl, this golden girl, who is very difficult to criticize, not just because she's a teenager, but because she's a girl and because she has Asperger's. So there's that as well. They've plopped her onto the front lines and are using her age as some kind of human shield, when, as you mentioned, she's saying the exact things that they want her to say. It is just so abhorrent and so intellectually lazy, and aside from anything else, goodness knows what lasting damage Greta Thunberg is going to have to endure after going through all of this at such a young age.
And just before I go, are you going to be applauding the mayor of Wagga Wagga as he drives an electric car to Sydney, taking at least an hour longer on the journey because it's got to wait for his to recharge halfway through, to save the planet when the car is, by the way, using coal-fired electricity in the first place?
Well, you know what, Andrew? I hope he drives safely. I hope he has a lovely time. I hope he sees some lovely scenery. And look, sure, it's a little bit ironic the car is using coal-fired electricity, but good on him for expressing his platform, and I hope he has a lovely time on the way.
And may it save the island of Tonga that he claims is the one piece of evidence he gave that, that's global warming, a bit of erosion in Tonga, and suddenly when most islands in the Pacific are growing or stable, that is his evidence. Anyway, Daisy Cousins.
That's Daisy Cousins on Sky News from Australia, commenting about news all the way here in Canada. And you know, one of the interesting things about the limited mainstream press coverage of the disgusting, rude treatment of that elderly lady in her walker by those three Antifa in Hamilton. It's interesting that international news is paying a lot more attention to this attack on free speech in Canada than some of our own mass media are. Thank heavens for the internet and the ability of anybody who was there with a cell phone to get footage of this and to shoot it out around the world. Excellent. I have tweeted this extensively. I want us to hold the enablers of anti-racism in the Canadian establishment to account. In fact, as soon as I learned about this, I tweeted things like this out. This is on you. I wrote about the Canadian Anti-Hate Network. One of their executive, Evan Balgord, had an opinion piece in last week's Hamilton Spectator urging Mohawk College to cancel the booking, not to give a platform to Maxime Bernier. I hold the Anti-Racist Canada. They, of course, are these anonymous. This is an anonymous smear website that constantly attacks populists or anybody that they don't like. And everybody in their world is a Nazi or a neo-Nazi, or you get the picture. I said to Hamilton City Council, this is on you. It is, because you have sided with the anti-racists. You would not listen to me to do a 5-minute presentation a couple of weeks ago where I would have been given 5 minutes as a delegation simply to take them to task for asking their own staff to look into ways of banning public demonstrations on public property by hate groups. Well, yeah, see, the problem is, what's a hate group? Well, a hate group, of course, is a group that somebody hates. It doesn't tell you anything about what the group stands for or what the group says. And of course, this would be a tremendously burdensome and unfair censorship in advance. I don't think they could do it legally, but that's not the point. The very fact that the council had urged its staff to do such a report, to look into it, to try to prepare such a report, is appalling. And, you know, this official sanction to anti-racism emboldens these street crazies, these red guards. And you know, I use that term deliberately. When, in his madness to hang on to power, Mao in the 1960s let loose the Red Guards. These were young people, heavily indoctrinated, fanatically loyal to him, and he said, "Well, we've got counter-revolutionaries in the party. We've got backsliders. We've got imperialist agents." Now, all of this was his fantasy, but he wanted to maintain power, and he felt the best way to do that would be to have a revolution within the revolution. And so he turned on many of his old comrades, people who'd been with him, and I don't feel particularly sorry for them, but people who'd been with him for 30 years. And he would denounce them as capitalist rotors, that is, they were secretly capitalists, or splittists. I always thought that had something to do with a hair problem, but no, it's creating division within the party, or that is, criticizing Mao. And these Red Guards would rampage. They'd shut down university lectures. They would denounce a professor as a capitalist rotor or an enemy of the people. He would be slapped around, sat on a chair. A dunce cap would be put on his head. A sign would be hung from his neck with Chinese letters telling what his crimes were. And people would come up and shout at him and denounce him and sometimes slap him around. In some cases, these people were taken out and shot. In many cases, they were absolutely ruined financially in terms of career. They were sent off to labor education camps. You know, feeble old professors were made to, you know, carry around pails full of dung. It was almost 10 years of madness. And I see the same thing in that, I was going to say, contorted face, but we couldn't see the face of the woman, the girl who was screaming at the old lady. There's no room for Nazis and blah, 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 blah. This person's demented. And the good thing about this, if we can see any good, is that they have shown their hand. And, you know, I think we all often been too forgiving, or perhaps just maybe intellectually lazy, to be quite blunt about it. We have got to hold the people who've enabled them responsible. And I said to Hamilton City Council yesterday, this is on you. You have enabled this atmosphere of anti-racism. And, you know, let's be quite clear. Anti-racism is a code word for anti-white. Anti-racism is a code word for anti-white. It's very little to do with racism. Racism is such a broad term, it covers an awful lot. No, anti-racism is a code word for anti-white. Well, let's change pace a little bit here. A great Italian leader, great populist, a great opponent of the immigration invasion, is the leader of the Northern Party. The Nationalist League, Matteo Salvini. And he recently issued a strong statement about some of the lunatic proposals of the radical left in the culture wars, and he's taking a stand for traditionalism. And this is from the ANZA news story, Dietland Rome. Nationalist leader, party leader Matteo Salvini on Tuesday slammed moves to produce meatless tortellini and to remove crucifixes from public places. I'm reading that there are those who are asking for tortellini without meat. It's like proposing wine without grapes, he said. Oriana Fallaci, she was a great journalist several decades ago. Oriana Fallaci was right. The problem is some Italians forgetting their roots, denying our history, from tortellini to the crucifix. Should I be the one defending faith and values? I'm a sinner, Salvini said. Some politicians and officials have proposed removing pork from tortellini and crosses from public places to meet the sensitivities and dietary restrictions of Muslims. The latest proposal came from the Curia in Bologna for the upcoming feast of St. Petronius, the city's patron saint, on October the 4th. And good for him. And no, there should be no compromise, no giving in. You've got to show these people they're in our country. It's our rules, our backyard. If they feel upset about a tortellini with pork in it, what can they do? Let me think. That's right. Don't have to eat it, right? Why should we have to change for you? We didn't invite you to our country. Most of us don't want you in our country. And that's the attitude, and it used to be said, it used to be called putting them in their place. In other words, no, we're not going to let you boss us around. And if you've got a problem with pork and tortellini, well, too bad. You don't have to eat it. Nobody's going to open your mouth and shove it down your throat. But no, you're not going to change our society. As for the Christian cross, it's our country. It's a Christian country. You have your own country, a Muslim country. As a matter of fact, if you want to be there, if you want, like Islam so much, why aren't you there? And what are you doing in my country? And it's this type of muscular response that's sorely, sorely needed. You know, we've got to, put some of these people in their place. Here's another example of censorship gone crazy. It's not a matter of looking around each day for a story. It's a matter of sifting through the existing stories and finding, choosing the best. Unfortunately, I mean, I wish it were different. But here is a story about what's been happening to the Rebel. Now, the Rebel is a populist online TV and news outlet. Does good work. It's run by Ezra Levant, who's Jewish. He's a believes in free speech, and he does some good work. I wouldn't agree with him on everything, but he definitely does some good work. But that's not really the point here. One of his reporters was dragged away from a meeting recently on orders of that's right, conservative leader Andrew Scheer. Now here's the story. Andrew Scheer has Rebel News reporter David Menzies arrested, handcuffed at a campaign event. That's the conservative leader. You know, you might want to say, well, so did the good guy. And Ezra Levant writes, I cannot believe it. We sent David Menzies to report from an Andrew Scheer campaign event, just as we normally do. It's the CB, that's Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, journalists were welcome. But David was kicked out. Now CBC is, sometimes we call it the Communist Broadcasting Corporation, and it's pretty left-wing and no fan of Andrew Scheer. They actually sent police to throw him out. They said David wasn't accredited. Really? David's been an accredited journalist for 30 years. He's covered hundreds of political events from parties of every stripe. Why would Scheer kick out David but welcome the CBC, who despises conservatives? None of this makes sense. Anyway, David left the property, went to the public sidewalk, he started filming a video about being kicked out, and then he was sworn by police. At this time, they arrested him and handcuffed him. Why did they do that? Who ordered them to do that? He's on the sidewalk. He's a man in his 50s with two artificial hips. He's not a screaming Antifa thug. He's not a trespasser. They handcuffed him. Why? To humiliate him? They finally took the cuffs off and he called me. That's Ezra Levant. But then more police came and took away his phone. It's like flipping Cuba. I immediately called a lawyer. Within an hour, the police let him go without any charges. But their point was made. Don't you dare try to ask questions of our political elites, or the police will arrest you. Arrest you for asking questions. I emphasize not in communist Cuba or North Korea, but or the bloody Congo, for heaven's sakes, but in Canada. As Levant says, I'll be candid. We're more used to Justin Trudeau banning us than Rachel Notley. She was the socialist premier of Alberta until she got defeated a few months back. It says more about them than it does about us. Actually, it does say something about us. We ask questions that the politicians would rather not have asked. Ezra Levant goes on to say there are three things you can do. Tell your local conservative candidate that this is nuts. It's a Trudeau move, not a conservative move. Ask your conservative candidate if he or she thinks it's wise to have police arrest the only conservative-leaning video company in Canada. Frankly, no reporter of any stripe should be arrested. This is Canada. And then he has an online petition. And I believe this is a little part of the report made by the reporter, David Menzies, after he was removed from this event in handcuffs. Shocking, but more than shocking. A sad commentary on what our country is becoming. I don't know if we're going to be able to get this or not. We do have our problems. It says to play it, and it's got an arrow, and it's obviously not going to play it, so we'll move on. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Michael Hoffman is a prolific writer, and one I strongly urge you to look at. He's written a good many books on Judaism as a religion. He's written puts out a regular news email that's also well worth subscribing to, called the Hoffman Wire. And this is from his excuse me. This is the 170th anniversary of a Masonic assassination. This month of October marks the 170th anniversary of the probable Masonic assassination of Edgar Allan Poe. He's the great American short story writer. He almost invented the, for American audiences, the horror story, or sometimes called the gothic story. Wrote some very early science fiction and may well have been the inventor of the detective story. He wrote with his story of Murder in the Rue Morgue. Anyway, to memorialize his death, you can hear Michael Hoffman read The Cask of Amontillado. And if you want to do that, just email me, paul@paulfromm.com, and I'll send you the link. The video was banned from my YouTube channel on August 26th, along with several other videos, and the suspension of my account. YouTube termed this video, among others, by this writer, severe hate speech. You can decide for yourself the veracity of that absurdist judgment on what is in fact a contribution to a more multidimensional understanding of American literature. My poll video, this is Michael Hoffman, was censored by YouTube mainly due to pressure exerted by organized campaign now underway to cancel my presence on the internet. I hope that when introducing Mr. Poe to students, literature teachers at high school and college level go beyond the telltale heart and the pit in the pendulum to explore the stories that illustrate Poe's most profound dimensions, as in Ligeia, The Fall of the House of Usher, The System of Dr. Tarr and Professor Feather, The Black Cat, Never Bet the Devil Your Head, The Mask of the Red Death, and of course, The Cask, that is a barrel of usually used to contain sherry, of Amontillado, which is a Spanish sherry. In terms of a spoken word recital of a Poe story, we've encountered no one who has surpassed Yamanda Gatache in her performance of The Black Cat. I'm going to skip a little bit of this. When Poe died on October 7th, 1849, after being struck by what we believe to be a blow to the back of his head, the early American Republic was in the throes of an anti-Masonic crusade. In the wake of the 1826 assassination of William Morgan, a former Mason who dared to publish a definitive text on the heretofore secret first 33 degrees of Masonry, that crusade would not end until the eve of the Civil War, when many distinguished anti-Masons such as William Seward and Thurlow Weed served in the administration of Abraham Lincoln. The Masonic history of the United States and the chronicle of the populist American counter-revolution against the invisible empire has yet to be written. When it is, we hope it will be from the pen of a revisionist, and we take note of its victims, including one of our nation's most remarkable authors, whose post-mortem reputation as a slovenly drunk was concocted by his bitter enemies in the lodge, who he mocked mercilessly in life. To him, they were all Fortunatos. Anyway, if you're interested in that, if you're interested in literature, you might want to contact me. I'll give you the link to Michael Hoffman's reading of the Cask of Amontillado. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Gonna take a musical break now and gonna play some Hank Jr., Family Tradition. Hank Williams, of course, Jr., the son of the great Hank Williams Sr. He was in his father's shadow for many years, but eventually emerged pretty much as his own artist, his own person.
Bye.
That's Hank Williams Jr. and this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the funny side of me. Here's a song by George Jones and late George Jones, the Possum, song about the conflict between sort of new country and traditionalist country, entitled "Who's Gotta Fill Their Shoes."
You carrying there, pal?
George Jones.
You mean the band? George must fly everywhere.
Nope. Just George's trip. We're heading home.
We don't see nobody since the interstate opened. Do you think he might sign my guitar?
He's awake in there. Holler at him.
Mr. Jones? Mr. Jones?
Yeah. Hey, old gentleman. What do you know?
Would you sign my guitar? A few others have.
I sure will.
Great. Just a second.
Oh, my goodness. Would you look at this? Waylon, Hank, Lefty, Willie. Where in the world did you get this?
They were all right here. This used to be the main highway. We just got lucky a few years, I guess.
Well, my goodness. What else you got?
Come on in.
All right. You know, this old world is full of singers, but just a few are chosen to tear your heart out when they sing. Imagine life without them. All your radio heroes, like the outlaw that walks through Jesse's dream. No, there'll never be another red-headed stranger, a man in black and Folsom prison blue. The Okie from Muskogee, or hello, darling. Lord, I wonder who's gonna fill their shoes. Who's gonna fill their shoes? Who's gonna stand that tall? Who's gonna play the Opry and the Wabash Cannonball? Who's gonna give their heart and soul to get to me and you? Lord, I wonder who's gonna fill their shoes? God bless the boys from Memphis, blue suede shoes and Elvis. Much too soon he left this world in tears. They tore up the 50s, old Jerry Lee and Charlie, and Go Cat Go still echoes through the years. You know, the heart of country music still beats in Luke the Drifter. You can tell it when he sang I Saw the Light. Old Marty, Hank, and Lefty, why, I can feel him right here with me on this silver eagle rolling through the night. Who's gonna fill their shoes? Who's gonna stand that tall? Who's gonna play the Opry and the Wabash Cannonball? Who's gonna give their heart and soul to get to me and you? Lord, I wonder who's gonna fill their shoes? Yes, I wonder who's gonna fill their shoes.
Hey, George, what happened back there?
I don't think you'd believe it, buddy. I just don't think you would.
Here's another a song that really resonates. Hank Williams Jr., A Country Boy Can Survive. This is Hank Jr., A Country Boy Can Survive. And it takes a little bit to because the internet's quite slow here, where I am here up in the mountains of British Columbia.
Got a good woman at home who thinks I do no wrong. But sometimes, Lord, she just ain't always around. And you know that's when I fall. I can't help myself at all. And I get about a rambling man. Put a cold one in my hand. 'Cause you know I love to hear those guitar sounds. But don't you play, I'm so lonesome I could cry. 'Cause I'll get all balled up inside. And I'll get
Hank Williams Jr., Whiskey Bent and Hellbound. This is Paul Prom, and you're on the Fighting Side of Me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. The show's repeated at 8 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem, the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Prom, and you're on the Fighting Side of Me. I hope you'll join me again tomorrow. And please send me your reactions and emails, paul@paulfromm.com. That's P-A-U-L at P-A-U-L-F-R-O-M-M.com. Sure, what's happening here? The Maple Leaf Forever.